Welcome everybody. This is Charles Cook. So I know while Charles Cook is going to be with you today, managing partner Cook Baxter here in Atlanta, and grateful with you in our new studio, in our office here. It's great because of COVID, we have an extra office. People working from home, so we converted an office into this kind of cool studio. Hopefully the audio sounds good. Please let me know if it doesn't. But today's a special day because yesterday, Congresswoman Salazar, along with several of her colleagues, has introduced the Dignity Act in Congress. Ayer, la congresista Salazar introdujo la propuesta de dignidad, el acto de dignidad, para la reforma inmigratoria. This is really an interesting bill. It's really the first attempt by the Republican Congress, Republican House, at a comprehensive bill. And I use the word Republican House, I mean Salazar. She's Republican. She put this together along with her Democratic colleague. And this bill tries to do a little bit of everything. It's not forward-looking, okay? It's very, very much focused on the past. So it's not very forward-looking, which is a mistake that the amnesty of 86 made. It was a backward-looking bill. It never accounted for future flow. And this bill does not account for future flow. It's the gravest mistake in the bill itself is that it does not look forward. What does immigration look like in the next 30 years, next decade, heck, the next 2 years? The bill does not attempt to do that, which is actually tragic because all of our global competitors, Germany, Canada, Australia, they are making plans in their immigration system to attract people to their country. And I'm not just talking about the quote best and brightest, I'm talking about people. In the United States, our gravest problem is we don't have enough people. We're competing against India and China, which are both five times bigger than us. We need bodies in the United States, and we're not birthing enough babies, so we need immigrants. Well, what does that future flow look like? Unfortunately, this bill doesn't do that. This bill is trying to take a Band-Aid and put it over the problem, trying to fix the problems of immigration today without really solving the future. So let's take a kind of a deep dive as part of this bill. And this deep dive is important because it lets you understand what the bill is. Now, the bill's name, of course, is the Dignity Act, or actually it's in Spanish, Dignidad, you know, because it's Latino, so they've got a Dignidad. Anyway, that's what it is, the Dignity Act. And the first half of the bill, this bill is 500 pages long. So, you know, who's the Republican will complain, it's been so long I can't read it. I've already read it. It doesn't require much. The problem is reading the bill is meaningless because unless you're sitting next to you with a copy of the Immigration Nationality Act, it's not going to make any sense at all. Because you have to, everything's an amendment to this, an amendment to that, tweak to that. And this bill is really a conglomeration of lots of tweaks that have never passed Congress. So really, a lot of it's rehash. There's good things that are kind of new. Most of it's just a rehash of the stuff that's been out there. Nobody sat home one day and said, let's write a big bill, it's all brand new. Because you don't have to do that. There's no reinventing the wheel here. But the first half of the bill is about border security, visa security, fixing asylum, things like that. So the first section of the bill is called Division A. Now it's Division A, Division B. Division A is the Border Security Act for America. Now you may recall that the House of Representatives has already passed a border security bill, which is never going to have a hearing in the Senate. We'll never see the light of day. It's dead. So this takes some of the provisions from that. So the first thing it does, number one, besides definitions, is entitled Strengthening the Requirements for Barriers Along the Southern Border. Basically, build a wall, build barriers, build things that impede people from coming, spend money, do analysis, even get rid of salt cedar trees and carrizo, what they call it, carrizo cane that grow in the Rio Grande River, which I assume they grow naturally in the river, get rid of all that because it makes it harder for the Border Patrol to catch people. So this is the first several hundred pages of this bill deal with that. And I don't really want to spend a lot of time. In my podcast, I spent a lot of time going through the different provisions of this. And at a certain point, it's just mind-numbing. There's studies that need to be done and more money spent on this and more money spent on that. You know, people will vote for this bill not because of the border security implements. Democrats will not vote for it at all for that. They will vote for it because of the positive stuff it does if they're going to vote for it. One of the things that is interesting, though, is foreign migration assistance. $50 million in this bill to foreign governments to interdict people south of the border before they come to Mexico. Also setting up migration centers in the Caribbean, Mexico, somewhere in Central America, probably Guatemala, south of the Darien Gap somewhere, and in South America. Set them up. And this is what Biden's doing, by the way. So this is really just funding what Biden's doing, and he's already doing, but actually giving them funding for it. The other stuff it does here is mostly body-worn body cameras, which Biden just required all ICE and CBP guys to wear body cameras. There's more training. There's more funding for them. At the end of the day, that's what it is. You know, there's also a tunnel task force, which I find interesting. They are allocating more money to port of entry infrastructure, which is where they find all the drugs, by the way. More money. Oh, here is something that I did find interesting. They're going to require DHS to staff the 75 busiest consulates and embassies with DHS fraud officers. So this is something that was created as part of the creation of DHS. They just never really done it. But they want to force DHS to have officers at 75 big, and they're going to look, presumably, at every visa application to make sure it's not terrorism coming in. Let's see how that works out. And then, of course, DNA testing, going to DNA mandatory, everybody that comes to America. Everybody that comes to America. And they want DNA collection from federal law enforcement agencies, and they want it from our friends around the world. Yeah. I think there's going to be some liberal libertarians going to freak out about this. And of course, mandatory E-Verify, which is a joke. I-9s don't work. Mandatory E-Verify doesn't work. It doesn't. Georgia's had mandatory E-Verify for every employer with more than 10 employees. Zero enforcement of that law. Everybody ignores it. I'm just telling you, that's reality. They're ignoring it in Georgia. I know governor, I don't know if you know this, but they're ignoring it. Because you have no money to enforce that law. Now, the last big thing before we get into the positive stuff is, quote, asylum reform. Or in other words, making asylum harder to get. That's what asylum reform is. They want to create 5 campuses. I love how they call this. You can call it a work camp. You can call it a detention center. But if you call it a campus, a humanitarian campus, it's all of a sudden magically different. Create campuses near the 5 busiest ports of entry. And instead of keeping people in CBP hileras, they're going to keep them in these campuses, which are basically detention centers. Ask the Japanese how that worked during Japanese Americans, how that worked during World War II. They're going to also do screening of asylum cases outside the United States, which I think is probably one of the best things they'll do. You can walk, because a lot of times people come to, why don't they just apply for asylum in their home country? Because you can't. It doesn't exist. You can apply for refugee status, but that goes to the UNHCR and you have to be actual refugees. Whereas asylum, you have to be in America to apply for. You can't be outside the country and apply for asylum. You can't. So if you fear death in your home country, your only option is to come here. It's your only option. Well, this, and I support this. I think this is a great idea. Have actual asylum officers stationed around the world. And they'll do asylum interviews. And same standard as if you're here, if you pass. Now, I don't know how they're going to secure the person's security. They're going to show up at the USCIS asylum office, whatever. But that's neither here nor there. But that's the biggest thing on asylum form. Oh, and of course, they're enhancing the penalties for asylum fraud. Now, if you file a frivolous application, that means there is anything untrue in your application, and you know about it, and you don't correct it. That's a lifetime bar. They just reiterate that in this bill. It's a lifetime bar. They also have something called the two-strike policy, which is kind of near – see if I can find the two-strike policy real quick, because it's really interesting. I mean, like any other bill, it's impossible to find anything in here. Let's see if I can find the two-strike policy. I hate to do this when I'm live. I wish I had bookmarked it, but let's back up here. Let's back up a little bit. Boom, 1605. Where are you? I'm getting close. Let's see. All right. So the criminal, the 1605, renunciation of asylum status. So if you have asylum, and at any time in 5 years after you get asylum, you go to your home country, even as a permanent residence, they revoke your status and they revoke your green card. Now, we've obviously, good lawyers have been telling their clients not to do this for years, but that's something that they have to be part of. So lots of penalties for asylum fraud, any materially false, fictitious, fraudulent statement, boom, that's jail time, and you're barred from even withholding a removal. And they're going to do more background checks on family, which they already do. So some of the stuff in here, I think the government's already doing. They're just putting it in to the statute. They're also going to do criminal background checks on all people that claim unaccompanied minors, which, why aren't they doing that now? They should be doing that now. All right, let's get to what everybody wants to talk about, and that is the Division B, which is the American Dream and Promise Act. So DREAM Act. DREAM Act is part of this bill. The DREAM Act says this. Let's turn to Section 2100. See if I can find it here. Oh, come on. Let's pull this up. Where are you? Oh, put it up on the right information in 2100. Let's see. There we go. All right. No, that's a little too. I went a little too far. Go back up here. Oh, here we go. All right. So, notwithstanding the provision of the law, any foreign national considered at the time of obtaining status of a permanent residence shall this. Any person who is inadmissible, deportable, subject to deferred and forced departure, has temporary protected status in the United States, or is a son or daughter of a foreign national admitted as an EHRL, or who been in the United States for 3 years, so if you've got DACA right now, or you've been here in the United States and you're deportable since you were 18 or younger. So you've been here for 3 years prior to the act. You were 18 or younger when you came into the country. You've never left. You are the child of somebody on an EHRL. You haven't persecuted anybody. You're not barred from adjustment on criminal grounds. And you have been admitted to college or a career technical school or have obtained a high school diploma, a GED, a career education at secondary level, post-secondary credential, or you're enrolled in school, you get a permanent residence. Boom. So that's probably 1.5 million people. No, maybe 2 million, like that. It basically gives a green card to any kid who got here before the age of 18, before they turned 18, been here for 3 years, you get a green card. No matter your immigration, you could be undocumented or you could have a visa. I mean, you could be on your parents' visa. You're getting a green card. It waives certain grounds of admissibility, but it does not waive the permanent bar. What the heck? It doesn't waive the permanent bar. How does it not waive the permanent bar? Oh, my gosh. That is a massive oversight of this bill. Wow. It does not waive the permanent bar. Wow. That's a massive oversight because there's going to be 500,000 people who don't qualify because they have the permanent bar because of that stupid law. Wow. I'm really sorry. Application fee is $495. For those that have had DACA, they basically have to pay the adjustment of status fee. All right. So you have to apply for military. You have to enroll in military service. You have to do in selective service, not a problem. Okay, there's DAR. Criminal national security grounds. Now let's take an alien eligible adjustment of status. If any of them is admissible. So I'm looking at the bars. No criminal offense, waivers for certain misdemeanors. So you got a misdemeanor, you get a waiver. That'd be like, is there something in here that waives the permanent bar? If you're in a gang, you don't get anything. That's smart. judicial review. So you can actually seek judicial review of the denials. That's actually a big, big difference. You're going to get appointed counsel. So you actually, the government will hire a lawyer for you, not for asylum purposes, but under this act, under the Immigration Counsel Act, whatever that is. And a person who is under age of 18 meets the requirements shall be provided a reasonable immediate education request. They're going to give you time, and you can't be removed till you get your GED. So you'll get a conditional status that's good for 10 years. At the time a person obtains conditional status, shall provide them with notice. They can revoke it. So this isn't like a regular basis of status. So you get conditional status as part of this. Okay. What else they got here? The next part of the bill, the American Promise Act. Oh, and also you get in-state tuition. All right. The American Promise Act is adjustment of status for certain nationals who've gotten TPS. Okay, so everybody with TPS for not less than 5 years gets a green card. That's the Promise Act. That's a wonderful thing. Here's interesting. So one exception to this, if it's supposed to be for 5 years, but certain breaks in residence is okay, less than 180 days. And if, if you were ordered to waive a visit with respect to person removed, deported on after for 5 years prior to such removal. Oh, basically, if you were deported under Trump, you still get a green card. That'll be fun to work out. You're going to need to prove your physical presence. All right, so that's the TPS. That's the TPS green card. What other stuff is here? Oh, it's all confidential so that none of this can be reviewed, used against you in deportation proceedings, nor if you get denied, you get referred to deportation. That's an old amnesty provision that was in there. They've got now the Dignity Program. The Dignity Program is, I guess, Part C or Title IV of this. The Dignity Program is basically they get rid of the 3 and 10 year bars. All right. So there's the 3 and 10 year bars, although I don't see the abolition of the permanent bar. No. This is good. So the title is wrong. For purposes of this title, Section 212A9 shall not apply. That gets rid of the permanent bar of this subtitle. They don't do that for the Promise and Dream Acts, though, but they do it for this bill here, the Dignity Program. So basically, to apply for Dignity, you must have been here 5 years prior to the act. You must not be inadmissible for the United States except for the bars, 310 permanent bars. You have to pay $1,000 into the H-1B non-immigrant petitioner account. Okay. You got to do biometrics. No felonies. Any felony, you're toast. Two or more misdemeanors. You get one misdemeanor. Otherwise, you're toast. If you're in a DV, you're toast. There are waivers for these convictions for a misdemeanor within 10 years. So you have to register, give your ID. You'll have 24 months to apply. If you deport during the 24 months, you don't have the bar, which is good. So if you've left, then you can come back and apply. You will be given, if you get granted, you will get a deferral of removal for 7 years. So work permit, travel document, and don't deport you for 7 years. You have to pay additional fees up to $5,000 over those 7 years as restitution, which is a joke. You must work for 4 of those years. Got to pay your taxes. And have pay any back taxes go for the last 10 years. You have to get medical insurance, not the government's apparently. You can't get any public benefits. I mean, this is really mean, actually. And then after 5 years, you can begin the redemption program. Oh, this is really, I love how they talk about this in terms of Jesus or something. You can begin the process to get, it looks like, temporary residence in the United States. And your restitution payments shall be dispersed to American workers through promoting apprenticeships and work-based learning programs. So there's going to be a whole bunch of GOP-sponsored organizations that get paid money off the government teat. You know that's going to happen. States will get certain monies as part of this, but I don't see the states being allotted any visas to give out. That's not there. So you have these grants here. You got that. Okay, you've got high-demand careers, so grants for high-demand careers, whatever those happen to be. There is entire sections on seasonal workers. These are H-2Bs, so amplification of the H-2B. There's cap relief here, increase the numbers, increase the fees. So it's still going to be an impossible-to-use program. There could be, it could be an online job registry. Okay, so they'll make it a little bit better. A little bit more government regulation, some foreign labor recruitment, some program integrity measures. You've got H-2As, H-2B employer notifications. Then you've got the H-2A ag workers. So it looks like the workers themselves get certified status. So you grant a certified business alien who completes the application. If you've worked, so basically it's a green card for ag workers. If you work more than 1,000 hours, over a two-year period, you're basically going to get certified agricultural status, as will your wife and kids. So presumably you can keep working in agriculture. You can keep doing that terrible work. It's hard work. I know I have a farm, and I work in it every weekend. But it's dignity beyond the H-2A program, which is good. And I know employers will like this. There are certain employer obligations. There's also optional earned residence for long-term workers, ag workers. So if they've worked 575 years for 10 years, so if you do this work for 10 years, then you actually get a green card in the United States. And then there are a couple of the other provisions here they're talking about get to the good stuff here. Beyond the workers, we're closing in towards the end of the information. We've got, ensuring agricultural workforce compliance. They've got a new H-2A program, which is easier to use for people. Now we get to this. This is really the one a lot of people have been talking about for purposes of the numbers of the future flow, right? So, skip here past the H-2A program, and you get to the very end of this. Protecting the American Family, American Families United Act. So this allows, in the case of a foreign national, a spouse, child of a U.S. citizen, terminate any removal proceedings, decline to remove them, grant permission to reapply for admission to the United States. So basically allow them to come back in the country if they've been waiting abroad because of hardship to the U.S. parent, spouse, or child. So basically reuniting families, hallelujah. But where is the elimination of 212A9? So far, I don't see any elimination of 212A9 here. None yet. Family Visitation Act, family purpose non-immigrant visas for relatives of U.S. citizens to enter the U.S. temporarily. So going to give grandparents, aunts, uncles, it looks like, a chance to come to the United States and visit their family. Spouses of children spouses and children, minor children of LPRs become immediate relatives. And then finally, last part of the bill is the fairness for immigrant apps. They say per country caps raised from 7 to 15%. That'll make a lot of Indians happy and Chinese nationals happy. Second, nobody waits longer than 10 years for a green card. That's so elimination of the backlogs. And then finally, children no longer age out, which is awesome. And then the last part is no longer counting spouses and children. You know, that part of the bill, which will have the greatest impact in over a million, maybe 2 million people over the course of the next year, if they pass, these are just 3 pages long. They could take this out of the bill, pass that tomorrow, and employment-based immigration is solved for now. But unfortunately, they don't fix the future. Improving employment-based visas. So individuals with doctoral degrees get extraordinary ability, O-1. They modernize student visas so they have dual intent. Expedite visa processing. That's it. So really, this bill is really short on the future. It's really short on the future. But it's pretty good for people that are here. But it doesn't fix the future. It's not future-proofing our immigration system. So basically, they think this is going to solve the border problem. It's not. I promise you, it's not going to solve the border problem. What will solve the border problem is an effective asylum system and an effective immigration system. I mean, kudos. But this bill, let's just take a look at it. Is this bill going to pass the House? No. There's zero chance it's going to pass the House. There is no commitment from the Judiciary Committee Chairman, Jim Jordan, or Speaker McCarthy to bring this bill up for a vote. None. There's no commitment to that. Now, Democrats would vote. If I was a Democrat in Congress, I'd vote for this bill because it's better than nothing. I mean, it's better than nothing. I'd vote for the bill. It's better than nothing. But here's my question to Representative Salazar. Which 10 Republicans in the Senate are going to vote for this bill? I'm waiting. Which 10 Republicans? I can think of four. You know, Romney probably vote for it. Murkowski probably vote for it. Collins probably vote for it. Lindsey Graham probably vote for it. I'm pretty much stuck there. And you may lose a Democrat or two because, you know, they're up for re-election, right? And they want to be tough on immigration. The thing is, this is tough on immigration. This is tough. But it's not going to solve the problem. In any event, there you go. Let's answer some questions. Can hear you just fine. Thank you, James. I don't believe them. Nothing. Well, good. Good evening there, sir. What is the dignity bill? Pema, I just talked about the dignity bill. There you go. It's Vanessa. Hey, Vanessa. How are you? Luis, hola, abogado. Saludos desde Seattle, gusto verles. Go is still pending. What are the choices of passing? That's what I just said, Akeem. I think there's zero chance of this passing. I don't see it passing. No provision for permanent bar. Yeah, that's the thing, right? Natalie, no provision for the permanent bar waiver under the Dreamer Promise Act, which means those people would have to go to the dignity bill, which is a jillion year away. Now, here's the question. If you got the dignity provisions, could you then adjust status because the waiver occurred? And this is why they're not thinking through these things, right? Did an immigration lawyer look at this bill that practiced immigration law for 35 years? No. So what happens when you let politicians write these bills? Do you think it's better for doctors to apply for advanced parole? But yes. Well, first of all, there's no decision on June 1 as a hearing. If you have DACA, you don't have a legal entry, apply for advanced parole. There is zero risk, zero risk in traveling on advanced parole if you have DACA. As long as you don't have one kid called me, well, I got a DUI last month. Well, you're going to lose your DACA. Don't travel, okay? But if you've got no convictions, once you have your DACA, you're clear. DACA means you're okay. You're going to be let back in. Go on the advanced parole. Do it. You never know when you're going to fall in love with a U.S. citizen. Luis, entré en el país en 2005. Usé un acta de una amiga. No pude pasar. Tengo un hijo de 21 años. No pude arreglar. Well, acta de ciudadanía, de ciudadano. Well, no, eres inelegible. I mean, si usted se representó como ciudadano entrando en el país, usted es permanentemente inelegible sin perdón. Punto. Lo siento, Luis. Wow, that was fun. I love doing the deep dive on the immigration stuff. You know, I love the bills. I mean, it's, you know, kudos to Representative Salazar and her colleagues for putting this together. You should have talked to an immigration lawyer before you did it to tweak some of this stuff. But I just don't see the votes. I just don't see the GOP, who's riding a high right now, trying to destroy our economy, that they're going to pass this bill. I just don't see it. Now, Biden would, if this bill was passed, if they passed, Biden would sign this bill. Oh, yeah. I mean, there's lots of people that say sign whatever you can get that has a modicum of good stuff in it. This is a modicum of good stuff. I would take this and run. All right. I'll be back with you next Wednesday at noon. I mean, at 1 o'clock here, noon on Tuesdays. And of course, this is my podcast now recorded. We will be back next week on the Immigration Hour and here with Cook Baxter. Again, Charles Cook, great to be with you. If you want to call us, you need us for anything, you just call us at 404-816-8611 and we can take care of your immigration needs. Till next week. Thank you, everybody.